This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, episode number 158, Plants as Medicine, with Dr. Dan Gubler. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast today. We're so excited to have a special guest with us. We have got Dr. Dan Gubler today. And Dr. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Heather. It's a delight being with you.
So Dr. Dan does something that we have never actually talked about on this show in depth. And so I think it's going to be really fun to get to know you a little bit more and what your background is. But you're a natural product chemist. And this is a new term to me, and it's going to be new to a lot of my listeners. But I think it's very applicable to what we study with Ayurveda and food and medicine and plants. And I know plant medicine is becoming bigger and more well-known. So I wanted us to just chat a little about, First off, what is a natural product chemist? How did you come into that space and just kind of your journey to where you're at right now?
Yeah. So a natural products chemist is someone that studies organic compounds, bioactive compounds in plants. So in plants, you have macronutrients, you have micronutrients, and then you have natural products, which are also known as phytonutrients. Mm-hmm. And phytonutrients are the medicinal components of plants. And so I've always been fascinated with nature, with plants, with the molecules that they produce. My grandpa was a biochemist. He worked at Wisconsin and Berkeley, and then he was a professor at BYU here in Utah, where I'm based. And I just grew up in his lab, messing around with things. I've always loved the plants and spices and herbs and their smells and their uses. My mom always loves to tell the story when, during the summertime, when you're a kid and you're bored and moms are going crazy, right? Because they're home all day long and they're driving you nuts. I would beg my mother, can I just please make potions? I love to make potions. I love to go into her kitchen and just take different herbs and spices and open up her spice cabinet and mix things around and smell it and, you know, heat something up and see how it changed when you heated up, you know, cardamom or cloves, nutmeg, different things like that. And I will neither confirm or deny that sometime when we played our games and we captured prisoners and whatnot, that in order to get out of prison, you had to or had not to drink one of my potions, you know.
Are they still alive now? Are those victims still alive? That's the real question.
Yeah, you know, I've been running a long-term clinical study, and about, you know, 30 years later, they're still doing okay. So
perfect.
We have those data points.
Do you think because your grandfather was a biochemist that exposed you to that world? Because I don't think most kids have that exposure, but I love that experimentation that you were so interested in. That's so fun.
Yeah, it was definitely influenced by my grandfather. He studied a lot of different things. He was pretty well known in his small field in biochemistry. He first discovered with a group of researchers what copper does in the body, right? Because back in the 50s and 60s, well, copper is a metal, it's a wire, you know, and he and others figured out that it was a cofactor, you know, it's vital for enzyme function. He also worked with a group of people and they figured out what thiamine does in the body. And so he was with a group of people that figured out that beriberi, which is a really devastating disease that was in Indonesia and Southeast Asia. It was like scurvy. You know, people were getting sick and they had no idea. And if you treat them with thiamine, they recover miraculously. And so, yeah, I think it was him. I got a chemistry set when I was around 8 years old. And my grandpa, when he saw the chemistry set my mother bought, and it was a great chemistry set. My mom did a good job, but he was like, that's just store-bought stuff. So about 3 or 4 days later, he supplemented the chemistry set with some cool stuff. So yeah, I think definitely my grandfather had a great influence. But I just love thinking about molecules that are in floating around in the air, that's in the water, and especially molecules that are in plants that can help people.
Well, and it's hard because we don't know what's in the food. And so for a layperson who's not a natural product chemist, we just go, it's a tomato. Yay. So we don't understand what those foods can do for us. And how do you feel about the whole isolation of the phytonutrients. I feel like sometimes, you know, we know a carrot is really good for us. And so then we try to identify, well, what aspect of the carrot is good for us. Yeah. So from a chemist point of view, do you focus more on what the entire plant does, or is it more on the individual qualities or elements or parts of the plant and how that influences how our bodies heal and what we're able to do?
Yeah, I think it's both. Obviously, plants are amazing with the mixture of compounds that they contain, right? You look at an apple and it contains a compound called quercetin, which is good for blood glucose control. It also contains different types of polyphenols that are really good for cognitive health. It contains triterpenes, which are really good for gut health. And so there's a mixture there of nature's really smart in how we have all these different types of foods incorporated, all these different types of molecules, incorporated into different foods. But then there are also certain types of compounds that are only found in individual foods that I think are worth studying. You know, like there's a bioactive compound called morin, which is only found in strawberries. And it's amazing for blood sugar regulation. Pharmaceutical companies are looking at making morin a drug. And it's like, well, okay, yeah, that's great, but just eat strawberries.
Well, and that's what is so funny is how they take these, you know, like willow bark and how it can help with fevers, and that we're going to just pull that out and make aspirin, as opposed to just, I mean, there's just, I think there becomes a disconnect. And in Ayurveda, we're so much studying the whole food and what it does for us as far as connection, right? Connection to plants. But it seems like if you understood all the constituents to them, the connection's even deeper, because then you know, wow, this food is doing this for my body. Almost like you're eating with more intention a little bit.
Right. Yeah. You know, 50% of all pharmaceutical drugs are from plants, from compounds in plants. And then pharmaceutical scientists will go and they'll modify it to make it a drug. The problem with that, and you know, I worked in pharma. I was trained as a pharmaceutical type scientist, and so I'm not bashing pharma. But the problem with drugs is they're designed so tightly to the body. You know, they're basically suicide inhibitors, and that can be good when health is in this death spiral, and you know, you're trying more proactive measures, and that's not doing anything, and you need something to pull you out of it. You know, then a pharma drug can be useful. But the beautiful thing about these bioactive phytonutrients in plants is that they bind, they come on and off to the receptors of the body, the enzymes. They click on and they click off. And so because of that, you have more of a modulating type approach. So it's kind of gently guiding the ship into the harbor rather than this really, you know, pounding, you know, the square peg into the round hole analogy.
So as part of your business and what you do, is it working directly with people who are needing nutritional therapies? They're needing some of these enhancements and needing some more benefits from the foods they're eating, or is it more on the research side? So what, on a day-to-day basis, are you doing a little bit of both or one or the other?
Yeah, I do both. So as a natural products chemist, I travel around the world studying new compounds and plants. And there's an imperative here because there's the number goes back and forth, but there's about 600,000 species of plants on the earth, and less than 5% of those plants have been rigorously studied for their bioactive compounds. And so I spend a lot of my time reading traditional medicine texts and learning more about plants and planning and thinking about different plants in different regions of the world, where to go, places of good biodiversity. India, amazing place. I've gone to Kerala and different places in India several times. Indonesia is a hot spot for diversity. Obviously, the Amazon down in South America. Madagascar is a great spot for biodiversity. So I do travel around the world studying compounds and plants, talking with traditional medicine healers, bringing plants back to my lab, analyzing them, separating out all the different compounds that are in these plants, figuring out which ones are already known, the ones that are not known, trying to come up with the structure of them, and then run them through different chemical assays to see what properties these individual molecules have. You know, are they anti-diabetic? Do they help with seizures? Do they help with cholesterol control? Are they gut health regulators? And then from there, I do have an initiative where we do work on incorporating some of those molecules into nutritional supplement formulas, new novel formulations that we hope will benefit people.
Well, that's so great though, because there's a lot of science behind that before they ever come to market. So then you're able to test them almost in a much more safe way. But I also feel like if it's a food and it comes from plants, there's a natural safeness and efficacy that we're like, okay, this is probably, at least for me, from my Ayurvedic background, yeah. I would love that. Do you find that you're often surprised by what foods are able to do? And it's like a whole new world's opened up to you with this particular plant, because I think it would be almost like you're on a discovery journal. You're like a, you know, Indiana Jones seeking out the plants. Where is the good plant? And instead of the, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, you're not looking for the Lost Ark. You're looking for this amazing plant. Are you trying to find some occasionally that are specific to a ailment or a disease or a treatment that you're looking for? Or is that more as a byproduct of going, oh, interesting, this is also helpful with like diabetes, like you mentioned?
Yeah. When I travel, when I do research, I always want to go into a place with an idea of the type of molecule from a plant we want to discover. So what we'll do is we look at enzymes, active sites in the body, and those enzymes are tied to different types of features. So recently, I am looking for plants that help to target an enzyme that help with blood, that helps with blood sugar control. Obviously, type 2 diabetes is off the chart. You know, there's a sugar glut going on with the many, many pounds of sugar that we all consume on a monthly, yearly basis. And so I am looking for natural compounds from plants that specifically help with blood glucose regulation. But at the same time, I mean, we're open. It's just amazing. You know, I remember in Polynesia going and talking with a traditional medicine healer, and she was telling me about this plant that they use, that when someone has insomnia, there's this plant that it looks like angel hair pasta, but it's okay. Bright orange. And in Polynesian traditional medicine on Hawaii, where I was studying, they said that this plant was a gift from the volcano god Pele. And that's why it's this bright orange fire color. And so when someone has insomnia, they drop a hot water bath, they get the water as hot as a person can stand, and they put the person in the bath and they throw this orange plant, about three handfuls, throw it into the water. The water turns yellow orange, and it said that it helps the person go to sleep. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time in Polynesia studying this plant, took it back to my lab and analyzed it, found that number one, it does have this benefit, right? Testing it with different people, it really does help to induce sleep in a remarkable manner. And then when we isolated it and took it back to the lab, we found and published that it contains compounds that work on the same receptor in the body that Ambien does. So it has Ambien-like properties, but it doesn't have these not so good side effects that Ambien has, right? We know people that take Ambien every single day, and there's some side effects that are not great. And this has the same chemical properties as Ambien, but we don't see any side effects.
That is amazing. When you find something like this and you see that it's working, is it a really long, rigorous process to be able to get it into people's hands to actually use it? Because I don't know if you have to go with plant medicine through like FDA, if you have to do, you know, how that works with medicine. Is it different, or is it still go through that same protocol?
Yeah, you do have to get what's called a new dietary ingredient approval or certification. When it comes to supplements, if the plant has been used in the food supply chain for long periods of time, then they just, you know, give it generally recognized as safe grass status, and you're able to use it. If it's a little more unique that it isn't commonly consumed or used in the supply chain, then you have to file for a new dietary ingredient application. The other thing too is, at least for me, I want to make sure that supply chain is good, and that we're not, you know, indigenous rights is just such an important thing to me. And there's a lot of people that just go into an area and they find something that's cool and they steal it and they take it back to the civilized world and use it and make a lot of money. And that's something that I never want to do. So I want to be very careful there. And if there's any area ethically that I feel like I can't commercialize it in an ethical, responsible manner and giving back to the people that collaborate with me in doing this, then I don't want to do it.
Well, and there's also something to be said for over harvesting.
Yes.
Right. And so you got some of these indigenous plants that are not being manufactured in a, you know, farm. And so you don't have the volume that you would have, and you can easily overharvest, and then suddenly that plant's not available to anyone. So is that something, when you find something that is really useful that you want to be able to use, do you then start to cultivate it intentionally? Because sometimes there's just wild grown foraged plants that are so great, but they've never been actually planted and harvested. So is that something you work with some of those indigenous people to do that?
We do. Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. And some plants you can harvest them and cultivate them and grow them on large scale. And some you can't. It's really interesting. You find this plant that just grows in the wild and it's growing everywhere in the wild. And you're like, well, this is going to be easy. And you know, take samples of it and whatnot and start to try to propagate and cultivate it and what, and it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting. Another really cool thing is that a lot of times you are able to cultivate a plant, but it doesn't have the same bioactive compounds as it does in the wild. And that's just crazy, you know? So you pick a plant that's in nature, let's say our insomnia plant, you know, and it helps with insomnia, but then you cultivate it in a field on a plot and you analyze the compounds and it's completely different and it doesn't help with insomnia.
That is so challenging then, because we want to protect what's growing natural, but if we want to actually be able to use it on more than, you know, 20 people, we need more of it available to us. I wonder if the reason that plants grow in different places differently, like you only will find these in certain areas, is because of the benefits. Like when in Ayurveda, we're really big on local, right? Yeah. What you have locally available to you is what's the best for your body and the best for your health. Do you think there's a correlation there? These Polynesian cultures that live near this plant, is it more beneficial for them because of the environment they live in than it would be somewhere else? And maybe that's why it's hard to grow it elsewhere. I mean, that's just kind of theory that I'm throwing out there.
Yeah, no, there is a lot of, it's more than a theory. There are a lot of papers showing that for whatever reason, the plants and the materials that are around in a certain region are useful for that area. So I've studied Chinese caterpillar fungus that grows on the Himalayan plateau above.
That sounds hilarious. Yeah. I'm sorry. Those words have never been put in a sentence before in my mind. I'm like, Chinese caterpillar fungus. Okay. I love that. I got to look it up.
it's beautiful. So only above 17,000 feet in the Himalayan plateau, you have this caterpillar, it's a caterpillar. It turns into a moth, obviously, but you have this caterpillar and there's a fungus that will actually infect the caterpillar. So these caterpillars, they live during the wintertime, they hibernate about 8 inches underground. And when they are infected by this fungus actually takes over the machinery of the caterpillar. So it builds its home there. It takes over the machinery. It takes over the neural network and whatnot. It can actually make the caterpillar move. So it's actually like a zombie fungus. So it takes over the fungus. It moves it from a vertical to a horizontal position. And then it inches up a little bit. So it's 3 inches underneath the soil. And then right around this time of year, it grows this stroma, this big kind of horn out of the head of the caterpillar. It pokes through the ground and it shoots out its spores, and it's called Chinese caterpillar fungus. And they harvest it in China, in the Tibetan plateau. And they're really expensive. If you have a high quality one, it can go for several thousand dollars US for just one because of its health properties. But the reason I'm telling this story, it's a really cool story, but the reason why I'm telling this story is it's amazing at helping with altitude sickness. And same thing, There's another. I don't know in Ayurvedic medicine. If you guys do you do much with shojit? Do you know about shojit?
You're talking shilajit. Shilajit. Yeah, it grows out of the rocks. Yeah, we just say it a little different. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the mountain tar. And again, that's really good for altitude sickness and a lot of different. It's good for oxygenation of the blood, which, you know, obviously if you're living at really high elevation, that you want to make sure that red blood cells are growing and you have a lot of oxygen in the blood. So yeah, it is site specific, that due to that area and its climate and its unique conditions, you do have plants that produce bioactive compounds that help with that.
It's interesting that you brought that up, because I was thinking of shilajit is how we say it, but it's
okay.
It's something that we are always in the Ayurvedic world very cautious about over harvesting because of how it just comes from the rocks. And we're like, you don't want to use too much of that. So as a practitioner, it's an herb that we only recommend under extreme cases where we're trying to cleanse the blood. So if they have like a blood poisoning or an illness or something. So that's so interesting. I'd never thought of it about it as used for high altitude sickness. We should give that to the people who are climbing Mount Everest. They just need that when they're up there doing their thing. So in Ayurveda, we focus a lot on toxicity, right? Cleansing the body and cleaning out toxicity. Yeah. So I was just curious in your studies and your research, what are some of the bioactive compounds that you have found that actually focus on that aspect?
Yeah. So plants are amazing in that any plant gives freely an amazing molecule that helps to cleanse the body. And that's chlorophyll. Chlorophyll, you know, we know that why the plant uses chlorophyll, but chlorophyll actually detoxifies the body. So chlorophyll is a flat planar molecule. And there are different toxins in the body that come from pollution. So we have polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. So from combustion reactions like car exhaust and factories, they produce these toxic compounds that get into our bloodstream. We breathe them in, they get into our bloodstream, they slide into DNA. So DNA is a double helix, as we know. It's kind of like rungs of a ladder. And it's like that big old extension ladder, you know, that you use to get up to the top of your roof that extends and whatnot. These toxic compounds can slide into the ladder, into the rungs of the ladder, and prevent the ladder from moving. And that's bad for DNA, and it causes a cell to die. Chlorophyll, because it's planar as well, it complexes with these polycyclic compounds and shuttles them out of the body. So,
okay.
Yeah. So chlorophyll is amazing at that. We have another compound called phycocyanin from spirulina, blue-green algae. Oh. That's really good at doing that. Broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cruciferous veggies, cabbage and cauliflower contain compounds called isothiocyanates that do the same thing. They bind to these nasty polycyclic compounds and shuttle them out of the body.
It's so interesting how modern science and ancient Ayurvedic knowledge overlaps. I just got done leading a group through a cleanse, and as part of that cleanse, they were eating high quantities of vegetables. And some of those vegetables that they would eat are ones that you just listed, a lot of those cruciferous vegetables. So it's interesting that wasn't, I mean, obviously they didn't know about those compounds thousands of years ago, but you know about them now, and there's that overlap, which is beautiful.
Yeah. And that's what's so fascinating is I travel around and I talk with traditional medicine healers and other people. More often than not, what they say, you go into the lab and you verify it, you know, when they say, you know, this can help with diabetes or whatnot. And you do your fancy science and isolation and assays, and then you find out that, yeah, it does. And I always wonder, you know, is it inspiration? You know, was it revelation that came upon these shamans and traditional medicine people that they were led to it? Or is it just trial and error over thousands of years? You know, we fed this plant and, well, sorry, grandma, you know, I don't know. I find that fascinating, you know, how that came to be, but it does. And it's just a thrill each time I see that. And it just makes my mind reel. I'm just blown away.
I think it's probably a combination of many of those factors, meaning they probably did test it. I mean, they had, you know, populations to work on, but I believe there was also direct inspiration about different plants. And from a real traditional standpoint, we want to connect with the plants, right? So we might even like meditate with plants and have our own personal experience with the plant to see how it affects us. And I think you can feel energy from plants. I don't know if you've ever experienced that when you're working. I think it gets a little more on the, you know, not so tangible side of things, but when you're working with plants, I mean, they kind of show you what they are, even sometimes visually.
Yeah, they do. And there's a closeness. It's just really cool. Being next to a plant and coming up and studying it, you know, when you study a new plant, there's different things that you look at, right? You feel the texture, you look at the stem, you look at the leaves, you do kind of a scrape thing, right? To kind of feel how it is. And it's amazing during that process. I do feel closeness. I do feel energy. I feel life. And it's amazing, you know, because these, they give us life. Not only do they give us the oxygen, but you think of all the health benefits that we have. Both pharma and traditional medicine, they come from these amazing plants, and they're a gift, you know, no matter what religious belief you are or whatever, I know that they are a gift. You know, I believe in God. So for me, I know that they're a gift from God here on this earth, and they need to be protected and they need to be looked after. So it's really sad to me that so many plants, And the number's hard, you know, people say anywhere from 10 to 100 plants each month go extinct. And that's really sad because, again, these medicinal treasures that are in these plants that can help with anything from the common cold to cancer You know, if that plant goes extinct, that knowledge is gone with it. And for me, that's sad. And so that's really what drives me each day when I get up and go to work, to really make sure that we are doing the best we can to find out these treasures, these secrets that these plants have, and unlock them so that we can help people.
Well, and I think it's interesting that stewardship that you're expressing. It's like I can feel that from you. There's a stewardship over these plants are a gift and we want to take care of them. And that probably extends to why you even got into this in the first place, is wanting to be able to help and to serve people. So when you find these plants and you're able to get these things approved, how are you getting these to people? Do you have supplements that you give them? Do you have, I just am curious about what you do in that way.
Yeah. So I do put them in supplement form is what I've been doing right now. I incorporate them into different formulations with other ingredients that are more well known, and they work together holistically to solve a need state, you know, whether it be diabetes or cholesterol, or, you know, we have a product that really helps with PCOS and PMS. That's really great. And yeah, for me, it actually, I do see this as a mission. And for me, it goes back to my grandpa. You know, when I was 12 years old, my grandpa, who was my hero, he had cancer, and luckily it was, you know, a non-aggressive form of prostate cancer, and he was okay and lived many more years. But for a 12-year-old, it was traumatic. You know, I still remember exactly where I was when my dad told me that grandpa had cancer, and I was sitting on my bed down in the basement on the bottom bunk where I slept. And I just remember thinking to myself, man, you know, I wish there was something we could do with science and with plants to help him. And that really drove me forward, you know, to see that this love that I had of science and plants and natural compounds could be used to help my grandpa, and, you know, translation to help everybody.
Well, and when we're looking at supplementation, sometimes we don't have accessibility to these plants that would do these treatments or do these things in our bodies that we need. So do you ever get a question from people of like, well, why go supplement? Why not do whole plant? And how do you balance between the two of them?
Yes, all the time. And that's a fantastic question. And it's, you know, I didn't really believe it as much when I first started studying plants or kind of walked into this area. But it's amazing that the chemical composition of plants, these phytonutrients, these bioactive compounds, they change so much depending on where the plant was grown. We talked about that, right? If you grow it, find it wild in the forest versus trying to grow it in the field. So location, humidity, amount of rainfall it gets that year, pollution. You know, sometimes when people build like a school a mile away, it actually, for whatever reason, can change the chemical composition of the plant. And so a lot of times you'll have a plant that looks the same, it smells the same, but the amount of bioactives in that plant is quite different from harvest to harvest. And so one of the benefits, and it's not all the time, sometimes you have species of plants that are very robust, that all the time chemical composition is very stable and things are good. But you also have the situation, like we just talked about, where they vary so much. And so that's where supplementation is helpful, in that you can dive in and so selectively pull out one or two of these compounds that are of biggest interest, that have the most powerful medicinal properties, pull them out of the plant and standardize it. So you know that, you know, like ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is amazing, right? Your listeners love it. You love it. I love it. Ashwagandha is amazing. And it's the bioactive compounds that do most of the cool stuff are called withanthalides. And so one great thing to do is to go into ashwagandha and selectively pull out the withanthalides, because these are some of the medicinal treasures. And so ashwagandha, again, the bioactive composition can vary depending on harvest conditions and how it was harvested and where it was grown and the soil conditions. And so in some cases, being able to standardize and pull out what you want, and to know that every time I take this product, I'm getting 100 milligrams of withanthalide A, it's powerful.
Well, and it's a question I get a lot from clients, because they maybe live in different parts of the world and they want to know, well, who should I buy these supplements from? I want to get ashwagandha. Who should I buy it from in Canada, for example? And without me knowing and being able to vet where it was grown, how they processed it, what's its constituents, I feel almost sometimes like, well, I can't guarantee that it's going to be as high a quality. Like, you can do the best that you can, but knowing exactly what's in it as a supplement form would be really kind of a, a relief to the mind because you know you're getting what you're trying to get out of the plant.
Right. And so for ashwagandha, that's where they do have standardized extracts. So they do have ashwagandha that's standardized to with ethylide. And so in that case, when you buy a supplement or you're getting ashwagandha in whatever form, you want to make sure that it's standardized to with ethylides.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I really like that. So I read something on your information about biosignaling. Can you tell us what that is? I'm just really curious. And this may be a complete segue from what we were just talking about, but it just sounds really interesting. So I wanted to know more about that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Biosignaling is so cool. And when we talk about how do these medicinal compounds and plants work, most of the time, it's about 70% of the time, it's biosignaling. So the body performs millions of chemical reactions every single second. So, the eye health, brain health, bone health, joint health, heart health, liver health, et cetera. We have all these reactions that are going on all the time. And these chemical reactions are orchestrated by enzymes. Enzymes are molecular machines. And enzymes are made by DNA, right? By our genes. And then if we take one step back, these genes are actually turned on by domino cascades. When we say biosignaling, we're meaning domino cascades. So when you set up dominoes, you push one domino over and all of them go, right? And I was watching a TV show the other night with my wife, had it on, and it's a reality TV show and they're building dominoes, right? They have like the world's largest dominoes and they have these dominoes that when it flips over, it causes magic tricks to happen and fireworks to explode and stuff like that. And that's how it is in the body. We have these domino cascades. What happens is lifestyle factors can pollution, stress, anxiety, soil depletion, and lack of sleep and other things can actually slide dominoes out of these cascades. So the body doesn't function properly. And certain compounds from plants, like with ethylides from ashwagandha, are actually biosignaling regulators. So they regulate biosignaling. So they actually are dominoes themselves, or they slide the dominoes back into these cascades so the body functions normally. And ashwagandha is an adaptogen, and that is its mode of action. It regulates biosignaling, which is why it brings calm and relaxation and balance to the body.
When in that way, it's almost like it would act differently depending on what your body needed, right? Did you need the domino, as it were, slid back in, or do we just need that reaction to actually start? And I think it's hard sometimes for people to understand that there's not always a uniformity to how your body will respond to plant medicine, because you might need something different than what the other person needs, but that doesn't mean it's not useful to you and helpful for you.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why there's many different compounds from plants that are regulators of biosignaling, but they regulate different signaling mechanisms, because there are some signaling mechanisms that focus on the cell, on how the cell grows and dies in its proper circle of life. There's some signaling mechanisms that focus on just cognitive health. There's some signaling mechanisms that are focused on just gut health. And there's different natural compounds from plants for each of these signaling mechanisms that helps to regulate them. And so you're absolutely right. It depends on your need state. But for every need state, it's really interesting. We're discovering there are natural compounds from plants that help with that need state to slide the dominoes back in and make sure the body performs like it should.
It's all about getting it in alignment. I love that. Where does someone start? That was my big question is, we know there are these things available. We know that you have these beautiful supplements. How does somebody know what they need? Do you counsel them? Do you say, this is a good one to start with? Because it can be overwhelming. You start looking up natural supplements and there's so many things out there. And before you know it, you're taking 92 supplements thinking you're doing a good thing, which you might just be doing too much and overloading your body.
Yeah, definitely. We start and we don't have some sort of a quiz or whatnot. We should, it's more just kind of natural as I talk with people and social media, the things that I share, but just kind of a quick primer. If cognitive health is out of alignment when it comes to emotional balance and cognition, the master regulators are a compound called ginkgolides from ginkgo, with ethylides from ashwagandha, bacosides from bacopa are really, really good. And so those are three that I would start with. If metabolic health for you is a challenge, high cholesterol, high blood glucose, then berberine is a master regulator. Berberine's amazing, you know, hormone control as well, especially insulin, you know, for women who struggle with PCOS and infertility, berberine is amazing. Silymarin from milk thistle is another really, really good one for metabolic health. Again, for cognitive type health and just overall health, quercetin is a really, really good one. It's also a master regulator of biosignaling that helps with all sorts of different things.
That's such a good overview, because sometimes we get, well, where do I start? How much do I use? So you actually counsel with patients then to help them know this is where we need some assistance, or is it more in a general forum, like you mentioned, Instagram, or maybe through resources that you put out where they can kind of self-regulate or self-guide what would be best for them?
Yeah, it's more in just a general form. I am in the process of writing a book, and I hope that that will be out here in a little bit. And that book is my attempt to help give people guidance, because I get questions all the time on social media, so many that, you know, that it's hard. I wish I could just sit down with, you know, people one-on-one like you do, you know, work with people. And I don't have that model set up yet. I need to, but, That book is my attempt to really help people to see what medicinal compounds, biosignaling regulators, and other medicinal compounds from plants can help with different need states, because they're there, they're ready, they're powerful, as you well know, and we need to take more advantage of them.
I love what you do. Now we know what a natural product chemist does and kind of the scope of that. Is there anything to our budding chemists out there? Like, I have young listeners, and sometimes I just want people to see that there is so much you can do in life to help and to serve in your own individual dharmic space, right? And for you, it's going into biochemistry. But what are other ways people can get involved in plant medicine in the way that you do, or that they can contribute to the work that you're up to? Because I feel like this is something that we need to spread. People need to understand the beauty and the sacredness really of these plants that we've been given.
Yeah. You know, natural products chemistry is not really your destination location when it comes to majors or whatnot, right? When people are like, what do you want to major in? Natural products chemistry. You know, it's not a well-known field, but as we talked about with the number of plants that go extinct every single month, every single day, we need more people out there that are passionate about plants, that want to preserve them, that want to protect them, that want to have a relationship with them, and then want to help other people. So, you know, for your listeners, if that sounds like something you're interested in, you can take natural products chemistry classes, you know, in a chemistry department. They usually offer those. We need more scientists, you know, especially to all the amazing women out there. You know, I have a family of five, including myself, and I have four amazing women, and we need women in science. You know, I remember when my oldest was 7 years old, and you have the career day, right? And they ask, what do you want to be? And she said, I want to be a scientist. And her second grade teacher told her, oh, honey, you can't be a scientist. You know,
are you kidding me?
Yes. And I marched up to her. Yeah. I flipped out. I marched up to her and I was like, what are you doing? You know, so I'm passionate about women in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. I do some volunteer work and stuff like that. That's one of my other passions, you know? So if you're interested in doing this, I would say go for it. Natural products chemistry is something that you can look at. We need botanists. We need people who study, you know, so there's people that, like myself, that dive in and geek out on the compounds and plants, but there's botanists, there's horticulturists, you can approach plants from all different angles using the type of technology and skills that you're comfortable with, right? Some people might not want to go super sciencey into the plants, but we need botanists that are out there that are analyzing plants and discovering new species. We need traditional botanists that talk with traditional medicine healers and learn and collaborate with them and learn what they know and to document it. We actually need historians that document, you know, that take these traditional medicine documents and archive them. You know, when I was traveling a lot in Indonesia and Polynesia, it was so sad to go into these villages and to see their traditional medicine documents that were just in this abandoned hut, and they were rotting, and the papers that you'd open up the book and, like, you know, a third of the pages were gone. There's just this big humidified mush to it. And, you know, it's just sad. There's so much history there that we need to hold on to, thousands and thousands of years worth of things that can help people. And it's just degrading. Mm-hmm. You know, so we need people to travel around and to preserve these documents to make sure they're in a good space, because a lot of people aren't going into traditional medicine anymore. It's sad when I travel around these traditional medicine villages, usually you have the knowledge that's being that's passed on from one generation to another. And I've talked with a lot of younger people that are heir apparent to that, and they're not interested. They're more interested in just, you know, sitting in the forest, watching TikTok and YouTube videos, you know, the stuff that grandpa does, that's dumb. That's hokey, you know? And so we need, my point is that if you want to be involved, there's so many different areas that you can approach this problem from and really help to find a solution.
Well, and I think Ayurveda is so supportive of that, because we use so much herbs and so many medicines and so many plants. And while we don't study the science aspect of it nearly as much, obviously, as what you've done, everything that you said just speaks to that, because we want to be able to generationally heal and support well-being for many, many generations to come. And it's so necessary that we first even know that it exists, right? If you don't even know that this plant can do X, Y, and Z, like you said, with those records, that is so sad. I can't even imagine how sad that would be to see those books having degraded like that. But you need that information so it can be passed down. So I love it. That was a call to arms, all of you friends. If you're feeling that pull, and maybe it's even just taking a natural medicines class to start with, right? Start to understand the food and the medicine that you're eating so that you can see, is this an area that I want to expand in? And you're never too old to start something new. I also believe that. So I love it. Well, Dr. Dan, where can people find you if they want to come and learn more about what you're up to? You have so many beautiful things that you're offering through both education and all of your different supplements. So how can they find out more about what you're up to?
Yeah. So if you want to learn about natural compounds from plants and what they do, I do most of my education now on TikTok. So you can find me on Dr. Dan Gubler is my handle on TikTok. So you can go there. That's where I share. Instagram, a few things, but TikTok is my major platform that I share things right now. And then if you're interested in looking at some of the products I've formulated, I have a company and it's called feelbrilliant.com, feelbrilliant.com. And that's kind of more the applied arm where some of the compounds and plants that I've found and discovered, I incorporate some of those findings into these supplements I formulate.
I love it. It's been such a beautiful experience to get to visit with you today. We've been greatly blessed and fed in education and knowledge and just the fun of being with you. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
My pleasure, Heather. It's been a blast.
Hope that you enjoyed today's interview. It was great to get to visit with Dr. Dan. And as we're moving into the fall, I wanted to invite you to join us in the self-guided cleanse. This is a cleanse where you're able to choose the start date based on your schedule, but still receive all the support that you need within our Facebook group community. You can learn more about the cleanse by going to ayurvedalifeschool.com/seasonalcleanse. Hope to see you in there. Have a beautiful week. Namaste. Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it. You can connect with me online at ayurvedalifeschool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.